You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of March 3, 2014. Let's go! And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. And we've got a fairly unique lineup on tonight's Punk News Podcast. We got, I guess, three people that have never been on a podcast simultaneously, if I am correct, which I believe I am. First,
it's true.
Here with me is the light of your life, the wind beneath your wings, the person that lets you believe that you can fly. I'm here with News Editor, Interview Editor, Everything Editor, Britt Reiser. Britt Reiser, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Speaking of March 3rd, today is 303 day in Denver. Ooh.
Oh, is that band 303?
No, it's March 3rd and our area code is 303. Come on.
Oh, because there's that band 303. I actually interviewed that
they're
band.
They're horrible.
Like, they're terrible. That's why we're not referencing the band and we're referencing Denver and the date.
So where do you stand on 303, the band? Do you do the hand thing where like you put three fingers up on one hand, three fingers up on the other? And like
I know exactly what you're talking about. Once upon a time ago in high school, that was a thing we did. But high school was 10 years ago, so...
Isn't that band only like 2 years old?
No, that band was really big when I was like... That band was really big probably about 8 years ago.
Really?
That's when they, like, blew through, and they, like, took the local scene by storm, and they played Boulder a lot, and it was a big deal. And then they got on the radio, and we were all really tired of them by the time they got on the radio.
It's kind of like Smash Mouth in San Jose, but honestly, I think Smash Mouth is a little bit more lovable than 303, to tell you the truth.
See, I would take 303 over Smash Mouth.
Really?
But
why?
Because I think Smash Mouth is terrible, and 303 is kind of catchy.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the guys at Smash Mouth are probably nice guys. Do you disagree?
It's probably true. 303 does strike you as being a bunch of douchebags. Although I hear they're really nice. I think one of them's a professor at Boulder.
Honestly, though, to tell you the truth, I interviewed them before they got big. I just did it for a local paper. I just kind of stumbled. Like, I didn't even know about them, and I just pitched them, and the local paper was like, yeah, let's do it. And the dude was really, like this is when they had a reputation for being douchebags, but the dude was totally cool. So, you know, I mean, it just goes to show... Like, people that have a reputation for being cool sometimes are real douches, and people that have a reputation for being douches sometimes are just really cool, you know?
I think being douches goes with their gimmick.
So you think they're not actually douches, they're just putting on a facade?
I think it works with, like, their super hyped-up sound that they have. You gotta be a douchebag to pull that off. You can't be, like, nice, quiet guy in the corner.
Ah, but how about Andrew WK? I get the impression that Andrew WK is a cool guy. Do you think he's phony?
I've heard mixed reviews on Andrew WK.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
From whom?
I think he's a cool guy.
Well, the person I think he's a cool guy is Greg Simpson. Greg Simpson, I believe you and your band, Outdoor Velour, are about to go on tour pretty soon, right?
Oh, it's one of our patented tourcations. With since it's just the wife and I, we can sculpt the tours around where we're going anyway. So we're going out to the Carolinas to see... some friends, and Carr is presenting at a conference in Chapel Hill, so we're playing Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and Charleston, South Carolina, this month.
What's it like being in a band with your wife? Is it exciting? Is it exhausting? Is it trying on your relationship? Does it pull you closer together?
I think it's pretty awesome. I mean, really, we were in a four-piece punk band before we started this band, which was like... 2.5 years ago, and we were just like, you know, we're sick of other musicians. Other musicians tend to be either real lazy or egotistical dicks. So we're like, you know, I can play multiple instruments. Carr can play multiple instruments. We'll just do everything ourselves, and we share like the same aesthetic tastes after being together. We've been married. Going on 7 years, and we've been together going on 11 years. So we pretty much, our tastes have kind of grown and, like, interwoven with each other.
Have you been going out with that girl since you were, like, seven?
Yes. No, since I was a junior in college, so, yeah.
Is she the only real girlfriend you've ever had?
No, I had a pretty long-term girlfriend in high school.
Were you still going out with her when you were, like, four?
Dude, I'm 32.
True.
You know.
Now, Greg, you've got a podcast that is centered on Midwest bands, correct?
Yes. Yeah, Two Gregs, One Podcast. We've done 13 episodes, I believe, all hosted through the org. And we kind of had a little bit of a break last fall because we were lazy. But we just put one out a few weeks ago, and we're going to have another one hot on its heels probably this week if Mr. Adam White will be so kind as to post the damn thing. We're always at his mercy. But the new episode, the episode is in the Dropbox waiting for him. We've got a new logo. We're like all about this. We got a new Twitter account. Oh, yeah, Two Gregs, One Pod on Twitter. And, oh, yeah, the new episode features a Third Coast Classic segment where we talk about a classic Midwest release, where we talk about Pere Ubu's The Modern Dance. Are you a fan of Pere Ubu, Mr. John? Or
I've got one Pere Ubu CD from like it's like from their mid period, and I only listened a little bit, but I did not dig it, man. But isn't there like a Pere Ubu connection to some other band that I really like? What's the Pere Ubu connection to? What other band?
Dead Boys.
Yeah, that's it. I love Dead Boys.
Yeah, yeah. No, you should check out Modern Dance. It was their first one. It's from 78. And it is really, I feel like it's really up your alley. It's just like, I mean, it's like art punk, really. It's just like really crazy, but still has a lot of that kind of like, well, we talk about Wire a lot. Do you like Wire?
Yeah, I love Wire. On your podcast, yeah. They're from England.
No. In reference to like Pere Ubu and them being kind of...
Well, you talk about Pere Ubu on every podcast of your podcast?
No, what? No, The Wire and Pere Ubu, we talk about like a similar vision there, as well as like The Fall and stuff like that. So Pere Ubu is kind of like... They're almost like the weird UK punk band of the Midwest.
But they're from America.
They're from America. They're from Cleveland.
Then how can they be a UK punk band?
Dude, I said they're like, they share a similar, what's wrong with you?
We got some mail this week. We actually got a bunch of mail this week. This first mail is from Jonathan R. He said, "Hi, Punk News. First off, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. You guys are always hilarious. But I have a suggestion."
Of course we are.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for the compliment. But Jonathan R. has a suggestion. He says, "I think it would be cool if you guys dedicated a few minutes of each episode to answering viewer mail. I know you guys have the Punk News Forum Spring, but I think hearing Mr. Gentile answering questions on the podcast would make for a much more entertaining medium. Keep up the good work."
He kind of brings up a good point.
And then we can give you shit live.
Well,
Mr. John.
Honestly, on the podcast, I think I deal it out more than I take it. I think maybe people should start dishing it back, because I assault people a lot on the podcast. Is the
podcast the only place you assault people?
No, I assault people all the time, all over.
That's what I would suspect.
That's kind of like my trademark. But Jonathan, thank you so much for the mail. Thanks for reading the form. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And we'll try to read more reader mail. You know, sometimes reader mail we get is just like, "Hey, I love the podcast. Thanks very much." And sometimes reader mail is like, "I hate you guys. You can go to hell." So we kind of skip those letters. But as always, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And you can our favorite kind of letters are letters that talk about stuff that you like on the podcast. Do you disagree with us? Did you agree with us? As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And believe it or not, we got a letter from Carlos from Cuba, believe it or not. Here's what Carlos said. He says, "Dear Cuba." From Cuba. He says, "Dear Punk News, I really like the podcast, but I would hope that you would play more older songs on the podcast, because I don't hear many older songs here in Cuba. We have new bands, but not many old bands." Signed, Carlos. So, Carlos, this is just for you. We're going to play a band back from 1977. This is the Killjoys. Trivia time. And this is trivia, so trivia-centric, I bet even myself wouldn't know this unless I did. What band would the Killjoys become, namely the lead singer? They're a UK punk band heavily influenced by the Sex Pistols, and I believe they were at the famous Manchester Lesser Free Trade Hall shows.
What band did they say the question again?
What band did the Killjoys become? They only had one single out in the UK. The answer is
the Rosillos.
No. The answer is Dexy's Midnight Runners, which I'm a huge fan of.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know Dexy's Midnight Runners?
Nope.
Come on, Eileen.
Yeah.
Do, I need you. Do. The funny thing about Dexy's Midnight Runners, in America, they're like a one-hit wonder. But in the UK, people talk about them like they're like one of the top 10 bands of all time. their third record, I forget what it's called. But I like the second or the first record the best. But in UK, like, they're considered like a super legit great band. But before they were Dexy Midnight Runners, they were the Killjoys. So this is a track by the Killjoys, and it's very influenced by the Sex Pistols. It's called Johnny Won't Get to Heaven by the Killjoys. And good luck tracking this one down. It's a pretty hard one to find. One, two, three, four! Punk News Podcast. Let's get to work. So we just heard a track by a pretty happening band, the Killjoys. I'm a big, huge fan of Dexy's Midnight Runners. If you haven't checked out Dexy's, you can either check out their first or second record. They're both phenomenal records, but also Killjoys, pretty sweet too. But now that we're talking about some cool dudes, let's talk about some real assholes. How about that? So as we
great transition.
As we spoke about on last week's podcast, the band Amur, they were going to have a song called Bring a Gun to School, but their former guitarist, who was not in the band, he got kicked out. He said if they put a song with that title out, I'll sue him. But he didn't really say what he would sue him for, so I don't know what he would sue him for. However, if you check out Victory Records' online pre-order of the album, the title of Bring a Gun to School is no longer there, and it's listed as an unlisted track. However, there's also another song called Free Publicity, which I feel I've fallen into the Victory Records trap. Britt Reiser, you're master publicity. You know what's going on. You can see beyond the HTML code. Are we all suckers for even talking about this? And is Tony Brummel rubbing it in our face with the track Free Publicity?
You know, okay, so I don't follow this band at all. I don't know anything about this band. I doubt I've ever heard a song of theirs ever.
They're bad. I listen to a couple. They're bad.
Yeah, you know, they're on Victory Records, and I just kind of assume everything on Victory's bad. But I saw our story on this. This is the first time I had heard of it. It was when I read the story, and I was like, man, sometimes punk news – well, not sometimes. Punk news is not objective. We do not do objectivity in the news well. this is one of the perfect moments of us really taking it and running with it. So kudos to Adam, or no, who put the story together? It doesn't matter. Whoever put the story together, kudos on your non-objectivity and being freaking hysterical with it.
Oh, let's see who put it here. Oh, John G on Monday, March 3. That's me. Must have been me.
No, I am not adding to your ego.
And Aubin, Aubin was the first. I was looking back to the other article. Aubin was the one that posted the Emir threatened with legal action. Emir. From February 20th.
Oh, okay. Anyways, would Emir really be able to, like, think this ahead enough to put – I don't know. I just don't – I guess I don't give enough respect to the band to think that they planned this out for free publicity to have actually been something that was intentional.
Do I think Tommy Brummel would, though?
I don't know. Plus, I think the reason they're getting so much hype on it is because the old singer, the old band member is like, I will sue your ass. Right. And could they see that happen? Could they see that coming?
Yeah, it probably is more the lawsuit than anything, than the title of the song.
Yeah, because it's like one of our commenters for once was actually kind of funny. And the dude was like, got my popcorn ready or something like that. And it's true, like, the lawsuit makes this a story. The lawsuit makes this somewhat interesting. Before then, it just is a bunch of douchebags. And realistically, in the metalcore genre, how surprising is being a douchebag?
Not at all. My favorite comment was Mr. Matt Ramone, who appears to be back. The name of this album is Eternal Enemies. And he says, I'd rather have eternal enemas. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
The question is, I mean, like, do you think the kids actually like this band at all? Like, I don't know. I maybe I'm being an old man here, but with a lot of these bands that are super controversial, you know, like this band, and what was that really terrible band everyone hated a little while ago? I can't remember their name.
They were Texas Midnight Runners?
No, that band rules. oh, man, what was the name of that? It was like everyone really hated them, and they, like, disappeared. They were like
Broken Side.
Oh, like, yeah, that band.
Like, does anyone ever like it seems like to me like the kids that like these bands don't even like the bands at all. They just like that they're like controversial. You know, it seems there's nothing underneath the controversy. You know,
my mom's gonna hate this.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, do the kids actually like sit down and like think, yeah, man, these lyrics mean a lot to me, or even, yeah, man, these jams really pump me up, or are they just like, look how angry this makes everybody. I'm going to do this just to be a dick, you know?
Yeah, I don't know anybody that follows this band. I only know of this band because of the conflicts they've had. I can't even tell you what they sound like. I just know that they're a part of that terrible metalcore genre.
I know them
because probably why I've never listened to them.
I know them because of their wonderful merchandise that I've been glancing at all afternoon.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about this, man. Like, they've got booty shorts, which are for girls. And honestly, I'm not anti booty shorts, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but, what the fuck?
But I mean, I'm not anti booty shorts. If girls want to wear booty shorts, you're not? Okay. No, I'm all for it, man. Why should I be against it, man? But like one of them has like slave on the back, like on the girl's ass. Yeah. It's not grown women that are buying this crap. It's 14, 15 year olds. I don't think this is the message we want to be giving to 14 and 15 year olds. Slay.
No, this is what's this. Okay. Cue Brit's feminist rant for the podcast.
Do it.
This.
We need to have like a buzzer that we need to have like an intro clip for Brit's feminist rant, because it honestly is like my favorite part of the podcast when you're on. We need like intro music. But so I'll do a temp one right now. We'll make a better one later on. Brit's feminist rant.
I do think I've done this on every podcast I've been on, which is like a whopping four.
That's
but
why
still.
I have you on, because you say what needs to be said. You say what people that are scared to make hard-hitting points are scared to say. Go ahead, Britt. Attack!
Okay.
Get him.
So there's a big argument that women often oppress themselves. It's called internalized oppression. This is one of those where you're like, hey, I'm a 14-year-old girl. I'm hanging out on the internet. Oh, I like this metalcore band because that guy that's got the terrible haircut but I'm in love with likes them. Therefore, if I buy these, what are they called, booty shorts and wear them around them, then boom. we're going to have something. It's going to be great. We'll fall in love. Then Benny and the Jets will play in the background, and it'll be wonderful.
Benny and the Jets.
In every major chick flick. Every major chick flick. Anyways, we're getting off topic. The point is, as a 14-year-old girl, and you're like, oh, slave. Cool, that sounds sexy. I bet there's some, like, pornography-type fantasy here that's just wonderful and great. No, that shit is so wrong. Let's break it down with what's wrong with that. But they don't do that. The band doesn't say, like, hey, 14-year-old girl who's really impressionable and just wants to make that guy with the bad haircut swoon.
And he's, let's like, 30.
About why this... What?
And he's, like, 30.
Right, exactly. No, that's terrible. I didn't look at this. Like, when we were preparing for this podcast, I saw that Greg posted all the different things that Amir has shitty merch for, and I did not know they had Slave. Not that I should be surprised. They have Dylan Klebold on a shirt.
I think booty shorts in general, like, especially when it's such a male-oriented label and it's a band of dudes and you're selling – stuff to your female fans that's basically objectifying them. And I mean, it's right off the bat, the booty shorts thing, like, mm-hmm. Okay, like it's weird to, like, have you ever seen a band that sells like women's underwear with their logo on them? Like, I've seen that a couple times and it's disgusting. Like, the whole idea of it just creeps me out. And I like know, this man. Is
I think you're projecting, dude, because I mean, let me put it this way. The dwarves have like their logo on like women's underwear and stuff. And people say that dwarves are sexist and stuff, but there's more girls at dwarf shows than there are guys.
Yeah, but you're that's not fair. You
I'm not kidding you.
A, I don't believe that. And B, that's not a fair statement. That's being like, oh, I'm not racist. I have a black best friend. That's the same logic you just told.
I don't see why women can't like make their own undergarment choices that they want to make. What's inherently sexist about that?
Well, I'm not arguing that it's inherently sexist. This was Greg's point. However, the booty short point, he does have a point. He does bring up a good
argument. I'm not against booty shorts in general either, but I do think in this scenario where they're marketing them towards young girls, it's an unhealthy suggestion or unhealthy... It's not marketing that is aimed towards helping one's fellow man out. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and this one's real tough because not only are you paying the band for these booty shorts, which are putting you in more of a sexual object than anything else, because nobody wears booty shorts because they're comfortable or because they look good. They don't ever look good.
They always look good. Booty
they
shorts.
Only look good because men want to see them. But they don't look good when you're like, oh, I'm looking in the mirror and yeah. I feel great today. Like, knee shorts, there's nothing to them. They don't do anything to you to make you look good. Anyways, you could argue that they do. Moving on. But to add the slave, like, not even the Amir name, but the slave on top of it, just further perpetuates this objectification and it.
So, Britt, would you argue now this is always the point. So the question is what exactly are we talking about? Are we saying is it in good taste for the band to do this? Are we saying should the band be allowed to do this? My stance is the band should be allowed to do it because it's a speech issue, so they can say whatever they want. But I just think they're a bunch of dickbags, and I don't think people should buy it, and I don't think stores should sell it. That's my stance.
I would agree with that. But I think this goes back to how we need to be having more and more of these conversations so that these dickbags in this band, when they're thinking of these ideas and they're sitting in their room and they're like, yeah, we're going to make merch. Oh yeah, booty shorts. How cool would that be? Oh bro, what if we put slave on the butt? Like, yeah, that's sexy. That's going to sell well. Like, how do these people come up with these ideas? And that right there, that's where you need to rewind and ask, when could we have had the conversation about why this is not okay to prevent this type of shitty brainstorming from happening to fruition?
How many people do they have like work? Like, if you're a Victory band on their level, it very well is someone else who thought of this idea, but it had to go through them at some point. I mean, it probably went by, you know, like a dozen people who all basically just nodded their heads and said, you know, that's a fine idea. Let's make those.
Yeah, it's, yeah. That's just like how every time a sexist advertisement or like something that's like inherently racist goes out to the mass media and the mass media like flips out about it, rightfully so, because it's usually worth flipping out about. And it's like, how many desks did that ad have to go through that nobody said, hey, let's hold the phone here for a second. Could right. this be a bad idea? Could this like influence things we don't want to influence? People are idiots. Everybody should consult me first.
I want to know what you think about those Hardee's commercials. Or maybe they call them Carl's Jr. out by you. I'm not sure.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Do you have Hardee's or do you have Carl's Jr.?
I have Carl's Jr.
What annoys me about Carl's Jr. is it's not Carl Jr.'s. It's Carl's Jr.
That's what I said.
Implying that Carl owns Jr. It seems like a weird...
Like, I've never processed that.
John, do you know the commercials I'm talking about where it's like a model or like some girl in a swimsuit eating like a huge burger?
Nope.
You haven't seen this?
Nope.
I watch a lot of Law and Order reruns. Anyway.
the only TV shows I watch are Adventure Time, King of the Nerds, sometimes Amazing Race, South Park. I think that's it. It's like the only show.
You've got to get better TV in your
room. Those shows rule.
We could talk about Amazing Race sometime then, John.
Well, fair enough, but let's keep moving. Let's talk about Strung Out. Strung Out, the lead singer, Jason Cruz, has released a video announcing a series of paintings tied to the release of the band's upcoming album, Transmission Alpha Delta, which is out January 30th, 2014. There's not a whole lot to talk about this, but I think it's cool that a guy is like doing painting like based around the music. I mean, it's been done before. Jesse Michaels has done it. Tim Armstrong just did it. We sent Armando on location, and you can find Armando's review of the Tim Armstrong show in the Punk News Review archives if you just put in Tim Armstrong art show. But more and more, we're seeing guys link their music with art. I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Did you guys watch the little teaser?
I did.
It was kind of weird at first, but then it was kind of cute by the end, I thought.
The end took way too long.
It did take a while, but it was around a minute and a half
that I was like, are you fucking kidding? This isn't over yet?
It did take a while, but I like the fortune cookie and the fortune cookie was guitar picks.
How do you do that? Can you custom make fortune cookies?
You can.
That's some good thought. That's some good intentionality and forward thinking on their part, because I got really pumped on the fortune cookie part.
You going to get your own feminist fortune cookies?
That's a brilliant idea. That's way better than the shit you get in most Chinese food these days.
See, if I were the marketing person, they would have Amir fortune cookies that had cool little feminist messages in them.
And then everybody would be like, man, they've turned into a bunch of pussies because all their fan base.
Was this chicken?
Yeah, exactly. however, to get back on point, I do think it's cool. It's not necessarily unheard of, but considering their album release isn't going to be until January, it's a nice way for them to stay newsworthy and to build some level of hype towards the album. So from the marketing perspective, kind of smart. Also kind of boring, though. It's not something that I would follow.
Are you guys hip to this band? I'll probably edit all those stories. Are you guys hip to this band? Are you guys Strung Out fans?
Once upon a time ago.
Yeah, I was a huge Strung Out fan. And it's so weird, me being the little straight edge kid that I was. I mean, I guess I still kind of am. I just don't call myself that. But I had a huge Strung Out sticker on the back of my
minivan. Wait, Strung Out is a straight edge band?
No, but their name's Strung Out. I'm like, I'm driving around in my minivan with a big sticker that says Strung Out on it. And I don't know, my parents let me. I had all these punk stickers, Adam's Package, Punk Rock Academy. Lagwagon, yada yada, and it probably freaked people out as they drove around. I, to me, it's the name of a band, but to other people, they're probably like, there's some young hooligan who abuses drugs.
Were you like driving through like a retirement community? Like, who was that? Yes. Like, he's got a Strung Out sticker. This must be a bad kid,
dude. It's the suburbs. I'm a suburban kid.
He's a suburban kid from the Midwest. He's a lost cause there.
Like
everybody will think
he's a suburban kid from like Afghanistan, like run by the Taliban, like Strung Out. Oh my god, he's a devil, you know.
I'm not saying that. They just probably assumed that I used drugs and I had this huge sticker on there.
You used drugs?
They probably assumed that I used drugs.
John Gentile is missing the whole point of this story.
I'm just trying to twist Greg's statement so he gets in trouble.
Anyway, I think Twisted by Design and Suburban Teenage Wasteland Blues are two prime examples of what used to be called the Fat Record sound, like the classic Fat Record sound, which I loved. And those two albums are amazing. Like their melodies are so good. They had this just that like tinge of like, you know, you could tell they all listened to metal, but the songs were poppy enough that I loved it, along with Lagwagon and NoFX and Propaganda and all that stuff. Yeah, and I loved the drummer too, was one of the guys I looked up to back in my early drumming days. So I was a big fan, yes.
Greg, are you going to get this album when it comes out?
I will definitely listen to it, and then I would decide if I'd buy it or not, but I haven't bought one for quite a while, maybe in a decade, I don't know. How many, I don't know, they've been around forever.
Well,
yeah, it's true. If it weren't for this being a story, I probably wouldn't have even realized they had a new album coming out, and I work for punk bands, I'm supposed to pay attention to this stuff.
Well, speaking of a band that's got a new album coming out, Teenage Time Killer has announced some people in its group. Teenage Time Killer is a brand new group or project, wherever you want to look at it. It's being run by two guys from Corrosion of Conformity, Mike Dean and Reed Mullen, who are kind of like the two main Corrosion of Conformity guys. Nobody knows exactly what form the band or the project is going to take, but people contributing to the recordings include Keith Morris, Jello Biafra, Nick Oliveri, Corey Taylor, Randy Blythe, Dave Grohl, and a whole bunch of other people are going to be on this. No one knows if it's going to be an album or singles or what, but I'll tell you what, man. As I'm sure the Punk News listeners know, Teenage Time Killer is a reference to a famous Rudimentary Peni track. And so honestly, I mean, I'm hoping this is going to be real cool. It can go one of two ways. A little while ago, there was like a giant like thing like this. It was called like Virus 42 or something. Greg or Britt, do you remember that? It was like Virus 42 or something. It had like 50 punk musicians on it or whatever.
Nope.
Sorry.
I'll see if I can track it down. But the problem is, it's like it had all these great people on them, but like nobody really like spent any time on it because they had to cram everybody in. So people just showed up and weren't used to their talents. So it was just a really bland record. Conversely, about a year ago, A389 Records and Magic Bullet Records were putting out tracks by Kill Life. They put out three singles, which I think is the way to do it. Nobody knows who was in Kill Life, but it included members of Effed Up, Crass, Pulling Teeth, Integrity, and it was like so cool. Like they put out three track singles, I guess, basically, and like it's like the super group, and like every single was basically like a mini album, and they were all awesome because the people on those tracks were used to their skills instead of merely making appearances. So I hope they do something like that, or conversely, I hope they do something like a punk rock version of The Chronic, where like they have like not one guest per track, but like guests interwoven and recurring throughout the album, so it feels like solidified instead of, oh, here's the Jello Biafra track, here's the Keith Morris track, here's the Nick Oliveri track. You know what I'm
saying?
That'd
be cool. Yeah.
So I mean, that's my thoughts on this. Are you guys hot for this? Are you guys excited for this?
I wouldn't say I'm super excited for it, but I will definitely listen to it when it comes out. I'm always kind of hesitant about these super group kind of things, like, because we've been let down so many times before.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, this has a bunch of my favorite old guys in it who used to do awesome stuff. This has potential. And then, yeah, I don't know. So we'll see. I'll listen to it.
Yeah, I probably won't pay any attention to it unless it's mind-blowingly great, and then I'll be curious enough to look at it, but nah, not interested.
I'm kind of hoping that it's got like a Rudimentary Peni feel to it, like kind of like Cacophony or something. That would be like friggin' awesome, man. So anyway, we'll see. In the meantime, let's play a track. We've got a track by a band off Tank Crime Records, April 19th. And April 20th is the Tank Crimes Brain Squeeze, which is a huge concert they're having up in Oakland, California. It's going to be a whole bunch of awesome bands there. Kicker's going to be there. Effed Up's going to be there. Ghoul's going to be there. Municipal Waste is going to be there. So many awesome bands. But also Bat is going to be there, which is a Municipal Waste side project. So here's a track by Bat, and this track is called by Bat off Tank Crunch. The track is called Total Wreckage.
You did it.
I did it. News podcast for the second half, and so let's keep on moving on our Punk News podcast. The first story on the second half of the tonight's Punk News podcast is Pup. Pup is a band from Canada that Adam White's a big fan of, managing editor Adam White at Punk News. They're on tour right now. They've got a new track called Guilt Trip, and I gotta say, this band's getting a lot of notice around a lot of different places. I dig it, man. I think Pup's pretty cool. Are you guys down with the Pup?
I didn't get a chance to listen to it. I was going to, and then you called me, and then I didn't.
I did listen to this track. It was the first time I'd heard them, and I was really digging it. I like the there's a lot of odd time signature stuff in there, but it's not too technical. I mean, it's still just has a lot of that raw energy, but it still had, there's some complexity going on there. I definitely will be checking more of these guys out.
Yeah, I interviewed Pup, and we're going to be running an interview on March 17 along with a review of the album. And they were cool dudes, real cool dudes. And they talked about how they have, like, odd time signatures. I like this track a lot. I like this band, but I just didn't hear odd time signatures. I just heard kind of good music, you know? But because
they do it, in a way that I think most people wouldn't realize it. I'm just a nerd for that kind of thing, and drummers would probably realize it because, you know, it's not just a backbeat or whatever. You know, there's something else going on there. But they do it pretty. It's pretty seamless.
Fair enough. Now let's see. Screaming Females are putting out a live album. I know Screaming Females have been quiet for a little while, but they've got a new live album coming out. It's got a one of the tracks premiered was Lights Out, which was originally off 2009's Power Move. Screaming Females are a pretty ripping band. Are you guys down with Screaming Females? Are you excited for this live album?
I really like Screaming Females. I don't like live albums, so I listened to that song, which was 7 minutes long. And I skipped the first 2 minutes to get to the meat of the song because that's how I feel about live albums. I was bored and I was like, get to it already. So live album, meh. Screaming Females, cool.
Yeah, this is one of those bands that people keep telling me about and I'll listen to, you know, on occasion. I can't say I've been fully grabbed by them, but every time I hear them, I like them. I don't have anything against them, and I did listen to this whole thing. I was shocked by the length of the track, but I just had it on while I was doing, you know, I was reading the other articles. I just had it on, and it got pretty gnarly there at the end. I didn't know they were so I don't know, it sounded not like jammy. I don't mean that in a negative way.
No, it did sound jammy. It did.
Yeah, right.
And I hate jammies. So I immediately was like, okay. And that's why I was like, nope, skip forward. You're not going to hate this yet. You're not going to hate this yet. Then I got to the bulk and I was like, oh, there we go. Okay.
I thought the sound where you went, whoo, was you like throwing your laptop out the window. Get this out of my house.
You know, I'm surprised to say, hey, I love live albums, man. Like some of my favorite bands, like some of my favorite albums are live albums.
Greg, I still never found that Rolling Stones album. I still haven't heard that. Which one?
Are you trying to illegally download it?
Nah, I don't do that a whole lot, really. Oh, but good.
Well, because I'm about to attack you for it. Man, you got to check this out. Probably, maybe my favorite album of all time is Rolling Stones Live in 1978 on the Some Girls Tour. It's called Live in Texas, I think. I'll look it up right now. But, I mean, it's the Rolling Stones doing, like, punk rock versions of their hits and pretty much two Chuck Berry covers in a punk rock fashion and pretty much every track.
That's kind of cool.
And like every track off Some Girls. So I love it. I mean, a lot of people echo that sentiment. Why don't you like live albums, Britt? Do you like live shows?
Yeah, I love live shows. But live shows, you're there. So, okay, good example. This just happened yesterday. I'm with my friends Ben and Carl, and Ben and Carl really like pop punk. To the extreme amount do they like pop punk. I am super hit or miss on whether I like a pop punk band or not. So Ben was like, oh, I'm playing DJ. What should I put on? And I said, something we can sing along to, which he took to mean pop punk. And so he put on Newfound Glory's live album. Newfound Glory, I listened to Sticks and Stones once upon a time ago, maybe like three times. Then I didn't like it, and I still don't like it. Then the like super hardcore kids got really into Newfound Glory, and I still didn't like it. So I've just never hit the Newfound Glory wave. This live album, I can see how the appeal to a live album might be that it covers a length of time for a band. So like maybe if Against Me they have put out a live album and I just didn't get it or listen to it because I didn't care.
I think it's a little weak. I think albums like considered to be a little weak, to tell you the truth.
And it's like, what, you can hear it in a really great sound everywhere else. So why do you need it on a live album where you have to listen to the bullshit crowd trying to yell things because they know that maybe they'll be in the recording? And how cool is that?
I will tell you why. I will tell you why. Here's why.
Are you that person? Are you that person that yells in a live album recording?
Yes, if I see someone recording a live album, I try to get as close to the microphone as I can and yell out song requests that the band is going to play, is obviously in their set list, but I yell it out anyways after and during every song.
Yeah. Even after they play that song, yeah. I yell for it again.
for me, the point of a live album is
taking care of business. Dude, get to the work in overtime part.
Do take care of business. The reason I like live albums for twofold. First of all, like a band like the Rolling Stones or whatever, like the songs are more energetic, a little bit more ragged, a little bit more raw, so they're more exciting and more dynamic. They're wilder, faster, nastier. The other reason why I love live albums is because sometimes bands will like do completely different versions live and really change them up and are influenced by the spontaneity of a live show. For example, Bob Dylan's live shows are way different than his album versions. David Bowie live on the Station to Station tour, like, did all Station to Station versions of his glam rock hits, which was really cool. I'm trying to think, like, World Inferno, like, you just can't capture, like, the live energy on a disc. So World Inferno's live album is just a wild, and it just goes to show you how great they sound live and what professionals they are. I'm trying to think of a great live album to come out in, like, the last 5 years or so. That's not by like a legacy band. Greg, where do you stand on live albums?
I don't purchase them a whole lot, but back in the day, back to my Fat Records obsession days.
When you were on drugs and listening to the Struggle.
When I was all strung out, yes, I was a junkie. No, NoFX, I heard they suck live, their first live album.
Isn't that considered to be like a really bad live album, though?
No, dude, that's no.
They do suck really badly live.
They do. Yes, they're self-deprecating, but
so fucking bad. But
it's but all that aside, the live album is hilarious because of the banter in between and El Jefe just being silly.
What, and the way they not funny.
It was back then. Have you heard that album?
I haven't because I don't like live albums or NoFX live.
Back then, their thing wasn't like a shtick. I feel like now Fat Mike's kind of like he's crafted this like weird I don't know, public persona. But back then, it felt a lot more innocent, kind of lighthearted, I guess, in a way, and just silly.
Sure.
And they would change a lot of their classic lyrics. Like, when they do an old song, they'd screw with the lyrics completely just to be silly. So I really like that live album growing up. I mean, I'll still go back to it and just lose my shit over it. I'll be cracking up about it. I believe they mentioned Rudimentary Peni on there, John G.
Like, they start to do, I think maybe they even do Teenage Time Killer. I'll look. Like, they, like, start to play it, but they screw it up or something.
Yeah, they do a couple little fake out intros and stuff. They talk about, they talk about Crass and,
Oh, they do? I gotta listen. Yeah. I've been listening all the way through. The Rudimentary Peni track they do is, I don't even see it here. Oh, yeah, here we go. They don't even call it that. Nothing But a Nightmare, which is off, I think that's off Death Church, I think.
Oh.
So that's people's take on. Listen, Punk News listeners, send in, let us know what your favorite live albums are. Do you like live albums? Do you not like live albums? You can reach us at podcast at punknews.org. Moving along, Mad Caddies have released details for their new album. It's called Dirty Rice. It's coming out on Fat Records. Here's what bassist Graham Palmer said. After a few years of writing and pre-production, we took the songs back to where it all started for the band. Us! At our drummer studio at his parents' ranch in Santa Ynez, California. After Fat Mike came down in September to help us sort through about 25 song ideas, we emerged at the end of the year with 12 tracks that became Dirty Rice. We're excited to hit the road and share our new music with the fans. Are you guys a fan of Mad Caddies? Are you excited for Dirty Rice? I think the title's a little bland, honestly.
Yeah, it's a weird title. I'm down with the ska punk. I'm all about it. They weren't my favorite band, but I did like them back in the day. Again, another one of those great back in the day when I would buy pretty much anything that came in my print Fat Records zine that came in the mail. I'd order one thing and it'd come with the little zine, and I'd look at whatever stupid stuff was in there, and then I'd order like everything that snuff, because Fat Mike likes snuff. I'd go, okay, I'll get that.
I like some of their stuff back in the day, and I'll be curious to hear it, but I'm not particularly excited or not excited.
Yeah, I think that's like kind of everyone's stance on Mad Caddies these days. I mean, you know, they've got their hardcore fans, and they've got their people that don't really care about them. And I guess that about wraps up the podcast. Is there anything else that you guys want to cover or talk about?
I'm pretty sad that you skipped over the Me First and the Gimme Gimmes covering Paula Abdul.
Oh, I actually definitely did not mean to skip over that. We should cover that. I really want to talk about that.
That song just takes me back to my sister just blasting that in her bedroom. Paula Abdul.
I'm actually glad I skipped it, because this is a great article to close out on. I got to say, for some reason, I'm getting really excited for the new Me First and the Gimme Gimme album. And I was never really that into that band to begin with. But it's looking pretty cool to me. As all the Punk News podcast listeners know, Me First and the Gimme Gimme is the Fat Records premier cover band. Most of the records have like a theme. The new one is going to be them covering famous female singers. And their first track they've played live off of, it's a cover of Paula Abdul's Straight Up. Britt, were you down with this? Do you like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes? Are you a Paula Abdul fan?
I don't know much by Paula Abdul.
You don't?
I don't. I mean, I probably know whatever was on the radio, but I probably couldn't point it out.
Do you know the song Straight Up? Like, Straight Up Now, or Is It Gonna Be You and Me Forever?
Oh. Now that you're singing it, yes.
Or You Just Hit and Run.
I just like how often you sing the songs that I don't know.
you really remember that song?
I do. I remember that. I do like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes overall. They've got some good stuff in their catalog. I missed the debut talk about this Divas album. So this is the first time that I'm really paying attention or heard of it. And it's an interesting concept. And I almost wonder what the intentionality was, or like what the conversation was when they were talking about what kind of theme they could create for this next album that brought them to Divas. And I wonder what their motivation was for it, or I don't know. The feminist side of me wants to know how this can help encourage women, or if it detracts and makes some of these great female artists if it sort of takes away from their legacy.
Wait, does but that just make by calling them divas?
It does. Britt, I'm curious, where, Britt, as a feminist, where do you stand on the modern pop diva as influenced by Madonna? Is Madonna the preeminent feminist, or is she damaging feminist ideals?
I think that depends on... I don't think there's like one set way. That depends on what your opinion is, especially your opinion on whether or not you think people in the media have a certain social responsibility, if women in the media have a higher social responsibility. But what I mean, I'm not saying that I think this is a bad idea that Me First is covering these ladies. I'm just wondering if there is a conversation to be had here. But then I am also wondering if maybe this is one of those times where I'm overthinking things too much and I need to just take a step back.
It's Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. They don't right. think. They just do.
It's true.
I think it's going to be
The album
awesome.
Could have some freaking incredible covers on it.
Yeah, I posted the link to this article to my sister's timeline. And she was like, amazing, they better cover at least one Whitney Houston song. And I'm like, I bet they will. And then I typed out, and I will always love you. I'm just imagining that with a double time beat under it. I just think that would be great. Also, Joey Cape in that video appears to have the same guitar as me. The J Mascus, the Dinosaur Jr. signature model of Jazzmaster. Which only comes in that one color. It's like the beige with like the gold pickguard, which is a pretty weird color combo as it is. I'm like, I think that's my guitar. And Joey Cape's one of my heroes. So that was pretty exciting.
That is a big deal.
Talking a lot about Fat Records, this is a good episode for me to be on.
Yeah, we are talking a lot about Fat Records. I guess it's just, honestly, I kind of think Fat is sort of having a little bit of a resurgence in the past 2 years. It just seems like their stuff is getting more press in the past 2 years than it was, say, 2 or 3 years before that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They had to reinvent themselves, though, in terms of, like, they did. There was definitely a period where they kind of lost their steam. And
right.
We could almost move it to like the dark ages when nobody remembered anything about Fat.
Yeah, I guess we'll close it up. What album are you guys looking forward to? What shows are you looking forward to that are coming out? Or do you have any? Have you gotten any recent cool vinyl acquisitions? Or do you have any recommendations?
Ooh, okay. Saturday is Propagandhi and the Flatliners, and I am really freaking pumped for that show. This is the national tour, though. You all probably already saw them already, but it's going to be really cool. Propagandhi hasn't been here since 2007, so awesome. Mm. And in terms of vinyl, here's something that the rest of the world cares about or doesn't care about. I'm getting my first record player here soon. It's being given to me.
First ever?
Yeah, I've never had a record player. I just grew
up. I never knew you were so lame. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I grew up in the iPod generation, so everything's digital. But yeah, my friend was like, oh, hey, I have a record player. Do you want it? And I was like, shit, yeah, I do. And I already have my first album because I do own two vinyl records of my two favorite albums. I already know which one I'm going to play first. I'm going to Instagram it. I've got my Instagram tagline. Thanks for it. It's going to be a big deal, guys. Big deal.
Oh, that's great. I'm currently trying to get my record player fixed. Well, I have two. I have a turntable for my component system. That's like a USB turntable. I rip a bunch of my dad's records for him and stuff. I've also got an old console. It's that I got real cheap from a garage sale. It's a 1954 Voice of Music record console. It's like in Mad Men where it looks like a buffet table and you lift the top to put the record in.
Awesome.
And it's got a huge 45 adapter, so you can stack. Ever since I got it, I started accumulating 45s. You can stack like 20 45s on it and it'll just keep dropping them and play all the A-sides. It's pretty amazing. But something's weird with the inside. I've replaced some of the tubes. I mean, it's an old tube amp. There could be some loose wiring or something. I'm going to have one of my more electrical-minded friends take a look at it because I've got to save it before Cara throws it away. She's down there listening to me say this right now. Just get rid of it. It's half broken. No! Oh, it's awesome.
Sometimes you just get overly attached to physical objects.
I know. I'm bad. Oh, anyway, John, speaking of shows, last time I was on the classic podcast, end of January or something, we talked about briefly about the band Cults.
Yes.
I went and saw them 2 weeks ago, and they were pretty fantastic. So just throwing that out there. And as far as other shows that are...
The Cult that toured with Against Me?
No, not The Cult. Cults. It's a girl and a guy. They're pretty young. They're from Brooklyn. They blew up with that song, Go Outside. Trying to remember what commercial it was on recently.
A car commercial, I think.
Yeah, they just put out their second album, though, and it's pretty good. Not as great as the first, but they were fun live. You know, it's just very reverby, kind of retro pop stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, honestly, like I think it's the end of that band just because the second album wasn't as big. So I think they'll probably disband after that album, to tell you the truth.
Hmm. Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I like their sound. I like their aesthetics for sure. The songs just weren't as strong. But also, speaking of live shows, I'm going to see it's pretty weird because I don't spend a ton of money on concert tickets. Usually, like, 15 is my limit. But yep. Carr and I are going to see Weezer at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville in April.
Wow.
Pretty excited for that. Because the last time I saw them, get this, was on the Blue Album tour when were opening for No Doubt.
Wait,
I'm old.
That is old. Would you ever go on the Weezer cruise?
I didn't, but I keep seeing Scott posting about it.
The only reason I know about the Weezer cruise is because of Scott's posts about it.
Yes. Scott Heisel and Scott Auth and Aubrey, they're all just making me so jealous. I did want to go. I mean, Dinosaur Jr. played last year. I totally should have gone for that. I mean, they have good bands on there. And they got the people just walking around. I'd go and like cut off a lock of Jay Mask's hair. No. They kick me off the cruise. Throw me overboard.
We're doing a good job at wrapping up this podcast. John Gentile, you have anything?
live shows. I think I'm going to go see Off next month out in Cali because I'll be out in Cali.
Big surprise
next month, so yep. I'm excited about that. However, I'm going to miss three World Inferno shows, which kind of bums me.
Oh gosh, how are you going to handle that?
I might be the end. I don't know. I might go see the Men tomorrow night. I'm actually just getting into that band, and then I'm probably going to go see Mischief Brew this weekend, which I'm excited about.
Oh, Mischief Brew just got announced for a show in Denver, and it's at our little DIY space, Seven Circle, and I think it will be awesome. I'm pretty pumped on that. It's like April something.
Are you a fan?
Seven Circle. You were supposed to come see my band play there, and then your car broke down.
Oh, God. The month of terrible car problems. Oh, we don't speak of those days.
Oh, sorry. That was a fun show. It's a cool place.
It's a really cool place. Every time I actually do an Instagram of a band playing there on the Punk News Instagram, somebody comments and is like, oh, man, that venue's so great. I played there once or I've been there. Like, this is so cool. And I feel a little bit of hometown pride every time I read those.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like Mischief Brew enough to go see them. I wouldn't say that I'm like a diehard fan. But I really love that folky, terrible punk rock stuff.
I love that terrible stuff.
We cannot really say that it's like good quality by any means.
Oh, I think Mischief Brew rules live. Their last
album, I've never seen them live, so.
Oh, they're awesome. I love them. I've seen them live probably 10 times, maybe more. But you actually might be seeing them in their acoustic form instead of their electric form. I like them both, but I like the electric form better. So, but they've got a brand new album coming out pretty soon, so you'll probably get to hear some hot new tracks. And with that, I guess we can close out the podcast. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. The opinions expressed on the Punk News podcast are the opinions of those making them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of punknews.org. We want to thank Bat and Tank Crimes Records, and we also want to thank the Killjoys. What the hell's his name from Dexy's Midnight Runners? Kevin Rowland of Dexy's Midnight Runners. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.